Hello, what have we here?
Just waiting for Dano, you know. I don't think he's been... I think he's only done it when we did Skype. I don't think he's ever been on Discord. And look right here, and I don't see him. So I'm like, oh gosh, I forgot about that. Oops. Good news is...
That's like every time I record, I forget that I have to start Audacity as well.
Mm-hmm. Like, technically, if everyone has good internet, we don't have to, because I record a mixdown of everyone, and it's like a... Downside is I don't have control of, like, editing out. If someone coughs, I don't have the ability to, like, cut that out anymore. But, you know, it's one of those things where it's nice if everyone just records themselves and I can control it.
Speaking of editing, just warning you, I'm also on call.
Okay, no worries.
So if I get a phone call, I may have to disappear.
Sorry.
Do you prefer, because usually the calls don't last very long, do you prefer if I come back, or is it easier if I just leave?
That's fine if you come back.
Okay.
Just put a note in the chat. Just do it in general. Because that's what we tend to use most of the time. That way, I'm looking at it and I catch that you're stepping away, so I don't expect, like, and what do you think, Caitlin? Caitlin, you there? You know, that sort of thing.
Yeah. Hello. Can you hear me now?
Yeah. Well, no, that's what I mean. Like, so I don't pass it off to you saying, like, what do you think, Caitlin? You're not there.
Yeah.
That's what I meant. Sorry. I can hear you fine.
Yeah, no, that's what I meant.
Yeah.
You know, like, you're not sitting there going, like, what happened to Caitlin?
Okay. Did you watch Forces of Destiny?
Yeah, I just finished before I hopped on to the recording studio, so.
Nice, yeah. They're cute. Like, I'm, you know.
Yeah, it actually brings to light something I've never thought about in the third episode when they give Leia the dress. Where'd they get the dress in the first place? It's not like it fits any of them.
I know. Well, that, yeah, but it also, like, it brings to that, like, how did she get that dress? Like, did she make it herself? The Ewok, you know, now we know the Ewoks gave it to her. But that brings up, like, what is the Ewoks' interactions with humans before? Obviously, Wicket was comfortable with her, and, you know, where you have someone like, you know, the Stormtroopers, they obviously don't like them already, you know, so it's like, it's just interesting. Like, it really opens up, like, Forces of Destiny opens up a lot of different little stories that I would have never thought to think about. And actually, I'm really excited for the Ahsoka episode, because actually Eckstein has gone on record saying that explores her relationship with Padme and Anakin much more than what we saw in the Clone Wars series, which, one, like, you've rewatched all the Clone Wars, you know, you caught up on it, and, like, I love the Clone Wars and Ahsoka in that. She's such a powerful character, and literally we see the Clone Wars through her eyes, kind of, so I'm really excited to see that episode as it comes out.
Agreed.
Okay,
so how long do we think the episode's going to be?
An hour tops.
Okay, perfect.
Well, that's what I would hope. I'm just waiting for Dano to, you know, get in here.
Has he seen your message?
I think so. He sent me a Facebook message saying he is, what do you call it, downloading. Or watching Forces of Destiny now.
Okay. I haven't looked at anything else because I just got home, but you said to watch them, so I'm like, priorities!
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, yeah, it's... We could have taken the first 5 minutes to do it, but, you know, it's not.
Okay. Wouldn't be as entertaining without Danya's commentary and giggling as she watches things.
So someone just joined our Discord, and I have no clue who it is. I thought it was Dano at first. I was like, is that? No, there is Dano.
Yep.
Okay, let me set up his roles. Easy. Okay, good. There he was.
Is that on your end, Mikey?
What?
Is that Amelia?
Yeah, the crying? Yeah.
Aww.
She's in the room. She is 2 weeks and 5 days right now, so.
She's adorable, she is.
She is itty-bitty, isn't she? Like, oh man. She's got me wrapped around her finger already.
Yeah.
I posted a picture.
Fatherhood.
Was I watching A New Hope or was I watching? I think I was watching Rogue One and she was just sitting in my arms and I was just like, she was asleep. I'm like, it's okay. We're watching Star Wars.
Now, did you watch her or did you watch the movie?
I watched her, the movie.
In that order.
Yeah. I mean, she was there, you know. She's 7 pounds. She's smaller than my cats. It's not even... Well, it's funny.
Is that what she weighs now or when she was born?
What she weighs now.
Okay. How much was she when she was born?
She lost a lot of weight because Leslie was given a lot of fluids. She had a knot in her umbilical cord. But like it didn't restrict flow or anything, so she's okay. You know, totally healthy. But yeah, so she... hey, Brack! But yeah, so she lost about 12% of her weight. She was 7 pounds, 2 ounces. But she got down to 5 pounds, 14 ounces by the time we left. And they said, oh, don't worry, she'll be okay. And then she's been gaining all the weight back, which is good.
Perfect.
Yeah, she's totally healthy. The doctor's like, she's growing really good. Right now she's eating like every hour. So it's like, oh, you're waiting to grow.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And Leslie's doing good?
She's doing good. A little sleep deprived, but that's, you know, expected.
That's a general symptom, yes.
I was laughing because my mom went out to Target and bought a bunch of, like, American flag stuff to take a 4th of July picture of her. I'm like, no, you don't need to pose for the baby. She's 2 weeks old. But, you know, I thought.
Yep.
Oh, grandmas.
I'm just thankful that I did not grow up in an age with social media.
I know, right?
Yeah, my app never did work, so it usually is at the bottom of my screen, but when we record, I have to go into it on my, through my internet. Yeah.
It's weird.
Yeah, I don't know, because like that one time Danya and I had a chat through it, I had to remember I had to go back into my browser to do it.
Okay. So, I need to build that calendar so we can plan out our next... Hey, Dano! Oh, his mic is muted. Don't know if he knows that.
But he'd hear you say it, though.
I know, he can hear me say it because he's in the channel. There you go. Perfect. Now you're unmuted, and you're here. Yeah, and you'll just use QuickTime. This just replaces Skype. That's all it is. Yeah, still use QuickTime, everything that you've done before. I'm okay with that, yeah.
Okay, I am recording on QuickTime.
And Caitlin, you're recording?
Yes, I am.
Okay, let me...
And, you know, on the Discord app, where do I get to choose my mic? Just to make sure I'm using the... Oh, here, I see the settings.
Yeah. Under settings, yeah, it's user settings. Let me copy this and post this to Patreon quick.
Input Yeti. but default cool.
Okay, link.
I don't think I need bolt.
This is 67, right, Caitlin?
Give me a second. I'm gonna double check. The last one you record was. No, that's not right.
I think so. I'm gonna just say it is when I publish it. If I'm wrong, I can update it.
What?
Who's yeah, Brack666?
One of our patrons.
A listener.
Listener.
Oh, okay.
They'll comment as I make mistakes and.
Cool. I love yeah. the name, by the way.
I know.
Yes, right? We are.
When I saw the icon, I was like, ah! Anyway.
Yeah, I freaking love Brack.
There you go. All right, so you guys ready to record?
Yeah, yes. Let's do it.
All right. Hey, everyone. Welcome back to Resistance Radio. It's episode 67. Hope you all enjoyed last week's show, because this week it's all about Ezra, and it's our last Rebels character spotlight episode. As always, I'm Mikey B, and Donya's not able to make it this week because she flew across the ocean to the United States and apparently doesn't have internet access in Chicago. Go figure. But we have Caitlin with us this week. Hey, Caitlin.
Woohoo! Hi.
Welcome back. And we have Dano joining us again. Hey, Dano.
Hey, thanks for having me back.
We're glad to have you back. If you want to get involved in the conversation, you can get a hold of us on Twitter at @RRadioPodcast. Leave a comment on our Facebook page or send us an email through our website, resistanceradio.net. Or you can leave a comment on this post when it goes up on Hypeable.com. Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/resistanceradio. With over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player, get the latest Star Wars audiobook for free. And I've noticed a lot of our Patreons are starting to read the Thrawn book. Definitely, it's a great read, but if you get a chance, check it out on Audible, because the audiobook version is amazing. Like, I went back and re-listened to it, even after I'd read it, because it's just so good. And I think we talked about it on the show when we talked about the Thrawn. Also, we've launched our Patreon, so check it out at patreon.com/resistanceradiopodcast. We have some amazing perks like Discord chat, where you can join us in our recording studio as we record live. Join us for movie nights, where you can get our audio commentary and really bad jokes throughout the entire movie. After Dark episodes, and our first After Dark episode is up on Patreon right now, and it's available for everyone, and it's called Potter Wars, where we get to discuss Star Wars, which has turned 40 this year, and Harry Potter, which turned 20. We do a little compare contrast. And we talk about some things that are interesting similarities between the two. Like, you know, Luke and Harry were both, you know, raised by their aunt and uncle. And they both grew up under the stairs. Mm. Maybe that's reaching a little bit. But check it out at patreon.com/resistanceradiopodcast. That is available for everyone. But going forward, all those After Dark episodes, which don't necessarily follow the typical show format, are going to be exclusive to Patreon members only. We also have t-shirts and buttons available on our website, so check those out at resistanceradio.net. As always, it's time for the news. So, biggest thing that's come out this week, we had a lot of drama the last couple weeks. A lot of the Han Solo stuff to talk about. But this week has been kind of mellow, only a little couple news topics. But the biggest one is The Forces of Destiny has been released. Which I'm super excited for these. And you know, so we've had the first three episodes have been released as of this recording. And I will say, the first one I was like, okay, I get this. It's 2 minutes. So I'm okay with it. And then as each one's kind of been released, I'm really liking them. Just kind of gives you a little snippet and story of just things that you may not have thought about. And they're actually considered canon, which is really cool.
That's good. I was about to ask you, are they considered canon?
Yeah, they are considered canon. So they're giving you, they all take place in the different time frames of the characters that you have. So we'll focus on different characters. Like the first two focus on Rey. The third one focuses on Leia. There's going to be ones on Ahsoka that take place during the Clone Wars. That really cool, because Ashley Eckstein has gone on the record talking about how this one, you get to see Ahsoka talk to Anakin and Padme and really kind of dive into their relationship a little more, which I'm really excited for, because one, I love Ahsoka. I was talking to Caitlin before the show started about how we got to kind of see the Clone Wars through Ahsoka's eyes. She was this new character introduced, and people were kind of like, I don't know about it. But as time went on, she became one of the most loved characters. Like, I love Ahsoka. So I'm definitely excited for Ahsoka section. But we also have other ones that are going to pop up with Maz, BB-8, and just other characters. So I'm super excited for them. We also going to see Sabine and Princess Leia kind of interact together, so I'm kind of excited for that since we've been focused on Rebels. But let's talk about the first episode real quick, The Sands of Jakku. So in The Sands of Jakku, a real quick synopsis, if you haven't seen it, check it out in our show notes. You can definitely get to it, or just go to StarWars.com. It's on the Disney YouTube channel. But it's all about Rey and BB-8, and they get to fend off a Night Watcher worm, which we actually got to see for the very first time in for The Force Awakens. It was kind of that character, if you think back to The Force Awakens, Jakku, after, you know, BB-8 rolls away from Poe Dameron, you see that kind of those eyes pop up that are glowing red in the dark.
Oh my goodness, that is it.
That's the first time we saw the Night Watcher. We didn't really know anything else. In this episode, Sands of Destiny, we learned so much more about this Night Watcher worm, which I think is like, I was completely blown away when I actually saw it.
Yeah, it was one of those brief, like, just clips, right? Like, we just see a random alien and don't know much about it.
Yeah, we don't know anything about it. It was in the book, but they didn't really dive into it. It's like, oh, this is a Night Watcher, like in the visual guide. And they just showed the
eyes.
That just
made this episode so much cooler to me right now.
I know, right? And it makes the second, second episode that much better, right?
Yeah,
so we saw the Night Watcher worm. They fend off this Night Watcher worm, which we'll talk more about in a second. And then it ends with them doing kind of a random act of kindness, which is definitely within Rey's character. What do you guys think of this first episode?
Well, I thought it was cute. I thought it was cool. It was neat to see a little bit of, you know, a little backstory. Now that you mention it's a Night Watcher worm from Force Awakens, it's even cooler, like I just said. But it was cool. You definitely see Rey's character come out. And like you said, at the very end, she does her little Rey thing. It's very much her. They kept to Rey. You know, there's no worry of them changing the character a little bit because it's a new form of entertainment. You know, sometimes they change a little bit,
In Clone Wars, you see Anakin be, you know, when I think of Anakin Skywalker, I think of the Clone Wars series Anakin Skywalker, not the film Anakin Skywalker. Nothing against Hayden Christensen, but the characters evolved and developed more in that series. But yeah, Rey is definitely Rey that we know from The Force Awakens. And what we'll see in Last Jedi. And of course, this is voiced by Daisy Ridley, so that's really awesome. What do you think of this episode real quick, Caitlin? I know it's the very first one. It's just they kind of fight off a Night Watcher, and they'll all spoil end.
Yeah, no, I thought it was really cute, and like Dano said, it's very Rey. It's very Rey and BB-8, and like especially the part like, you didn't want to spoil the end, but like her act of kindness, but also her not knowing it, but using the Force when it spits her staff back at her, and she knows enough to catch it at that moment.
Yeah, and that it's very reminiscent of something you see in The Force Awakens with a blue lightsaber, right? So yep. it's definitely a fun little episode. When it first dropped, I threw it up on my TV. I'm a big Apple fan, so I have an Apple TV, and I had it on my iPad, and I was just like, oh, big screen, I gotta watch this. And you know, my dad was sitting right there. He's like, "What is this?" I'm like, "Just quiet. Let me watch this." It was 2 minutes, and it was done. I was like, "This is great." He's like, "Oh, it's a Star Wars." I'm like, "Yes, it was Star Wars. It was the new thing that they're releasing."
I think the coolest
part was that I definitely, like you mentioned, the Night Watcher worm, Dano, because in the Force Awakens, all we did was we got to see those little eyes pop up, and I was like, "Oh, that's kind of cool. It's kind of like an alien that we've seen before, but not really. We didn't know what it was." So I will spoil this if you haven't seen it. If you don't want to be spoiled, you know, cover your ears for 1 minute. Sorry, but the Night Watcher worm, it pops up its eyes, and that really is just like the nose of it, if you will, eyes are on it.
It's like the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah, it's like the tip of the iceberg. And then, literally, of course, as it comes out, like, it's this huge, huge worm. Like, think Jabba the Hutt times maybe 20. Like, it's huge, huge worm with big old maw teeth and everything. Like, think of almost like the space worm from Empire Strikes Back. It's this big worm, but got a little tiny, like, nose type thing. I think of, like, in Finding Nemo, all the, you know, the little kind of the deep water animal fish that have like the glow.
The anglerfish,
like the little things, like, okay, and there's like, ah, like there's always a bigger fish. Like, that's exactly what I think of when I think of Night Watcher worm.
I see the light.
But yeah,
episode definitely one throwback.
There you go. So it's really nice because it really is one of those things where it builds onto the lore of Star Wars, and it definitely lets you see Rey when she saves BB-8 from the Night Watcher worm. She still goes ahead and understand what the worm was after. It was just hungry, and she does something to kind of do a nice little random act of kindness for the worm, which is really cool because it leads us directly into episode 2 of Forces of Destiny, which is called BB-8 Bandits. So Rey and BB-8 run into Tito again. So obviously in The Force Awakens, Rey saves BB-8 from Tito. And between then and when they're going back to, you know, the Jakku station to go to, to get her portions, this is where these two kind of episodes take place. So at night, that's when they fight off the Night Watcher worm. And then here is Tito has returned before she goes back to Jakku, the settlement.
Oh, the Nima outpost or whatever.
Nima
it is?
Outpost. Before she goes to Nima outpost. Thank you, Daniel. Yeah. I just totally brain fart there. But yeah, so this is before she heads back to Nima outpost. Tito returns with some bandits, and they try to take BB-8 from her. What's really cool is you see kind of a speeder bike style chasing on her speeder, and they're on normal speeder bikes with her and BB-8 kind of rolling out. And of course, because of her previous episode, her random act of kindness, she's actually able to use her newfound friend, to help her and stop Tito. Obviously, the nice part is no one gets hurt in it, which is good, because, you know, that's very, you know, I don't think Rey intends to hurt anyone, you know, directly, but it was nice. What you guys think of this episode here?
I thought it was cool. I like that they're using these little 2-episode story arcs. Where, you know, you have your beginning and then the second one kind of ties it up. But I really like the fact that we got to see more of Tito. And I'm hoping with more Rey episodes, we get to see other smaller characters that were briefly in Force Awakens. Maybe Constable Zuvio. Maybe. Yeah, I'm hoping for something with Constable Zuvio.
Constable Zuvio was in, they had the characters for him, the action figures, but they cut him out of the movie. He wasn't actually in the film. So it'd be cool to see him there. I'd also like to see something with Unkar Plot. Even when she was younger or something like that. But yeah, I this is a really cool platform for them to strive and push forward, like, story. That's really cool because it's reachable by everyone because it's free. There's no paywall, no comic, no nothing that people have to get into or something that's beyond it. It's YouTube. You can watch it on your cell phone. You can watch it on your TV. You know, it's easily accessible by everyone. So I really am liking this. And again, these first 2 episodes, I think, were a great start to it. And I think the 3rd episode is probably my favorite, though, which we'll get to in a second.
So I got a question for you guys. How do you feel about the look and the art style of it? Oh, I have like a love-hate relationship with it.
Well, I have a love-hate relationship too, I agree, but I love the style. Like, if you were to take any frame still, I think
I love the color palettes. I think the color palette of this is gorgeous. Those purples and the oranges, like, it all looks really good, but I don't know how to feel about it. It looks like a coloring book. Like, really thick lines, and I kind of like it, but at the same time, I'm like, I kind of want a little bit more out of it.
I also don't mind because, it's under 3 minutes. So
true,
it's
very true.
It's not if all the Clone Wars was like that, I'd probably have a harder time.
Yeah, it's a lot easier to take when it's small, little bite-sized amounts.
If you guys remember, now this is not what I'm going to mention is not canon. Do you guys remember the micro series Clone Wars that was released before the Clone Wars series?
Oh, the Genndy Tartakovsky one, right?
Yeah, exactly, that one. That one's not considered canon anymore, but the real part is it was built up, and it literally, the last episode of it was the prequel to...
Yep, the same, Revenge like, right Sith, in the Revenge next Sith, frames for episode
Revenge
3, right?
Sith. Yeah, episode 3. Yeah. So, at the time, when they said it, they said, yes, it is, but when they retconned everything, like, that kind of got scrapped because it didn't really quite match up with everything.
Yeah.
But leading up to the film, it kind of was. The animation style on there reminds me very similar to what this type of animation style is. If you freeze frame any frame of Forces of Destiny, I think it looks beautiful. And I'd like to print it out, become a screensaver, all those things. But as animation, like Caitlin said, because it's only 2-3 minutes, I don't mind it. But if I was watching a half an hour show, I'd feel like it's almost a cop-out. Like, it's not really anime style animation, but it's not quite enough. It's kind of a, like Daniel said, it's a coloring book style, artwork, which is great. I think it looks great, like I said, steel frame. But as animated-wise, I feel like it's lacking a little bit of the detail that we're used to seeing when it comes to Lucasfilm animation. Caitlin, what'd you think of episode 2, BB-8 and the Bandits?
I also, because you were talking about the racers, it reminded me of pod racing because it looks so much like Tatooine.
Yeah, Jakku definitely is like Tatooine.
You know, the Skywalkers do like their pod racing.
Thank you, because we all know that Rey is Luke's daughter. I appreciate it.
And yep. Danya's not here to poo-poo it.
Sorry, Danya.
Love you, Danya.
Anyway, moving on to episode 3 of Forces of Destiny. This one is no longer about Rey and BB-8. This one is called Ewok Escape. It focuses on Princess Leia and Wicket on Endor. We get to see how Leia actually gets her Leia Endor outfit, which is really cool because, you know, again, these are considered canon, and they're just little snippets in between things. So if you want to take Return of the Jedi, this is after Leia gets separated from Luke. She has met Wicket, and as before she gets to the Ewok village, you know, again, we don't see her again until she's at the Ewok village ready with her hair braided in the, you know, the Endor Leia outfit, if you will. She and Wicket are walking around, and she's like, okay, little one, what's going on? She's trying to learn more about him. And they come across two other Ewoks and some stormtroopers. Well, Wicket kind of goes off being Wicket himself, and he is able to snag these stormtroopers, and of course she helps him in the long run, so the Ewoks befriend her, and guess how she gets that Endor Leia outfit? It's presented to her, and they even give her a really cool spear, which I thought was a really cool touch at the end. What'd you guys think of this episode, Ewok Escape?
I think it's cool. I'm hoping for another two-parter, and we won't know until next Monday, right? Yes. But I'm hoping that this is the first part and there's going to be another one with a bigger payoff. It was cool to see that she got that, but I have a feeling there's something else that's going to happen in the next episode that we're going to really like even more, just like they did with the first two.
I concur.
Yeah, I'm sure there's going to be more. And like I said, we know we're going to see Princess Leia before Alderaan's destroyed, because she's going to be interacting with Sabine. We know we'll see Clone Wars era with Padme and Ahsoka. So we're going to see a lot of different things. I know we're going to see Hera in some of these, so I don't know who she's going to be interacting with or if it's going to be her by herself.
So that's really cool.
So the really cool part about, you know, these Forces of Destiny, they're 2 minutes, they're on YouTube. A new episode will be released every Monday on YouTube. And it's just one of those things where if you get a chance, take a look at them, watch them. They're really fun little bits of information if you're a big Star Wars fan. So overall, I'm a huge fan of Forces of Destiny, and I can't wait till the action figures from this come out. You know, my daughter.
That's what I was wondering. Has anybody seen the toys yet, like out and about in public, or
no,
just only through?
I haven't seen the Forces of Destiny toys out yet. I've been looking for them. I don't know if they're actually available. I think they're coming out during Force Friday. Probably Force Friday.
Yeah, I really want that lightsaber.
Yeah,
so they've got like a lightsaber staff that's going to be Rey's staff, but it's compatible with all the Blade Builders lightsaber toys. So I can't wait to get a hold of that so I can do, you know, toy reviews and stuff on it.
That's awesome. Yeah, speaking of which, Dano does have a YouTube channel, so make sure you check that out if you guys get a chance.
But, oh yeah, shameless plug.
I know, sorry. I had to, when you're talking about toys, Billy, I'm like, that's you. Yeah, so I'm excited to see the toys for this. You know, obviously my daughter's only 2 weeks and 5 days old at this point, but she's going to have one of the, you know, the Forces of Destiny toys, because I think they're just awesome.
Have you guys followed like the Twitter stuff about this? There's a lot of people who are like upset that it's there to, that the show is basically created to sell toys. And there was like a tweet that went out that said like, or it was a comment left on YouTube that said, so this is for girls, right? And Star Wars official response was Star Wars is for everybody, which was beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's been funny to watch people's reaction in the way that everyone's just like, no, it's good. Like,
and that's the point of it is Star Wars is for everybody. You know, Ashley Eckstein was on the Star Wars show last week talking about this, and it was one of those things where, you know, little girls get made fun of for liking Star Wars, and that's kind of, you know, in today's age and time, is like, come on, Star Wars is for everyone. You have people like Jyn Erso and Rey who are very strong female leads. You have Luke, Han, Lando, Princess Leia. You know, have all these great, you know, characters to look up to and identify with. So there's no reason that it can't be for boys and girls. Like, I get.
Yeah, I'm really glad we're there now.
Yeah, I get, you know, the whole marketing things, you know, toys. Like, we saw this with Marvel, and we saw this with, but, you know, and when Force Awakens came out, like, you couldn't find Rey stuff. You found a lot of Kylo Ren stuff and Phasma stuff. But, you know, Phasma obviously has a mask on. You couldn't tell that she's female. But it's one of those things where, you know, you couldn't just find Rey stuff. So now, hopefully, you know, people just realize that Star Wars is for everyone. So I love that they're drawing that line. Kathleen Kennedy has taken the stance with, you know, Star Wars. So I think Forces of Destiny is a good step in the right direction for all this. And I'm excited for all the stuff to come out with this as it kind of grows. Moving on to the next bit of news. It's interesting here. Colin Trevorrow is back in the news when it comes to talking about Star Wars Episode 9. And this one, he talks about how he is a little sad. It's a bittersweet that he is directing Episode 9. because he's already seen The Last Jedi. Aw, too bad he's already seen it. And he's going to be obviously directing episode 9, but he's no longer able to just enjoy it as a fan. You know, he was able to watch The Force Awakens as a Star Wars fan. He got to sit next to his kid and just giggle as he read The Crawl with his son, and he was able to watch Rogue One. So I get this, you know. You know, I get this, you know, one of those things where it's like, you know, him and J.J. Abrams both talked about how they were, you know, J.J. Abrams kind of had to have his arm twisted to, you know, actually direct The Force Awakens because he didn't want to because he was such a fan of Star Wars. You know, and Colin Trevorrow was a fan of, you know, Star Wars before.
I'm sure they didn't have to twist too hard, though.
I'm sure. It's like, come on, you're getting the opportunity to direct, you know, be part of the Star Wars universe, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, but I get this. Like, it becoming bittersweet. Like, it's no longer going to be a surprise. It's no longer going to be fun. Like, we're expecting to have the big, like, Luke, I'm your father. You know, sorry.
Yeah, he'll never get that experience, that fan experience of watching it for the first time.
I'm not going to butcher the line, but Vader saying, I am your father to Luke. you know, we're not going to have that type of, you know, surprise anymore. Or we're supposed to have that surprise in The Last Jedi somewhere along the lines. And guess what? He doesn't get to have that experience with his family and around, you know, with Star Wars fans. So I get it.
But at the same time, then he knows to look at them when that moment plays out to see their reaction.
That's true. Like, now, yeah. I will say this, like, it's one of those things, like, you know, I was in film school and I directed stuff and I've shot stuff, and it's always fun to kind of see people's reactions to the stuff you worked on, especially if you spent a lot of time on it. But it's, you know, I get where, you know, for something of this scale, you know, I can't, you know, as much as I'd be like, oh, I would love to direct a Star Wars film, at the same time, it'd be kind of like, you know, think of like Wizard of Oz, going behind the scenes of, you know, the wizard, and be like, oh, it's not really this almighty wizard. It's a guy behind a curtain. Like, you're taking away the magic of it a little.
Well, like, and I have no experience, but I would imagine, like, even just, you don't see that one scene anymore. You think about the day you shot it and what happened, like what the weather was and what went wrong, what went right, or like if you spent a lot of time in the editing room, like,
yeah, and like you're going to have to think of all, you're going to think of the entire experience. It's like anything that happens. Like, if you're going to think of the experience, not what you're watching the first time, you know, it's like, think about the first time you saw Rogue One. And I think Rogue One probably has the best response. Like, when you see Vader for the first time and you see Princess Leia at the end, like, at least for most Star Wars fans I've talked to, like, that was like a, oh man, I totally wasn't expecting that. And it was really awesome. And like, everyone had this really cool reaction the first time you saw it. You're like, oh, either you got really excited or you're like, oh my gosh, what's happening? Because you saw just everyone else die a second ago. You thought it was over. And then all of a sudden, this huge action thing ended on it, which literally led up to right before you have, you know, A New Hope. So, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, you don't get any of that experience when you made it, because you get to think about what, you, like you said, the weather, you know, everything you have, everything that's around that scene versus just watching it and experiencing the scene in its full finished, you know, form. So I get it. It's really interesting that he says it's bittersweet, but I'm excited to see episode 8 and then eventually episode 9.
Only a few months away.
I know, right?
It's so great. I love it. Every year we get Star Wars. There's constantly new Star Wars stuff. It's such a good time to be a Star Wars fan.
Well, you know, and you know, Dan, you weren't on when we were talking about Ron Howard directing Han Solo, but I am so excited for him to be taking over Han Solo. I've actually...
But will he do a part where he narrates it?
I said I would like that. I'd be like, you know, he said, you know, I would even like him to take Lando's voice. Like, I said it was fine for Han to take, you know, the Falcon, but I wasn't fine. Yeah. He'll get it in the end. Like, I'm like, maybe on Cloud City or something. I would just love to have that narration or something. It'd be just really fun. Anyway, let's move on to our spotlight topic, and it's our last crew of the Ghost, Spectre 6, none other than Ezra Bridger, who Star Wars Rebels really does follow. So, real quick, Ezra Bridger is a human male Jedi Padawan who became a rebel fighter and revolutionary leader in the early rebellion against the Galactic Empire. He was born to Ephraim Amir Bridger, whose public criticism of the Empire led to their imprisonment, leaving Ezra an orphan on the planet of Lothal. He joined the rebel crew of the Ghost in about 5 years before the Battle of Yavin and became a Jedi apprentice to Kanan Jarrus. Bridger's ability grew quickly, and a message of hope he broadcast in the Lothal sector inspired a number of rebel cells to begin working together to fight the Empire. So, Star Wars Rebels really does focus on Ezra. He's kind of the central character of everything here.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And it's really interesting. If you go back to watch season one, so the way I've kind of structured the discussion on Ezra was last week we talked about Sabine and her relationship with everyone. Whereas this one, I really wanted to focus on seasons one, two, and three, each season, because Ezra grows in each season, beyond the fact that he loses his Aladdin hair in season three. But he really does grow quite a bit. And you know, he probably has the most, like, prediction. We said, oh, Ezra could have been this or that, and you know, people still think that Ezra is Benicio del Toro in The Last Jedi, you know, so like we, you know, there's a lot of like, you know, there's a lot of, you know, ambiguity of what happens to Ezra and where he goes and what's going to happen.
I mean, he's Snoke, everybody knows that,
or Snoke, right? Or Rey's father, or you know, there's so many different theories that are kind of interesting there. So one interesting bit, if you go back to season one, Ezra was actually born on the first Empire Day, which is the day that Order 66 was issued, which when you think about it, that's a really interesting, very interesting way, you know, time frame to be for him to be born, because that's also the same day that Princess Leia and Luke were also born, too. On that day that all that happened. So Ezra is the same age as Luke and Leia, and obviously later on in season three, there is a small encounter that Ezra has with Obi-Wan, which is obviously protecting Luke.
It must have been a hard day for the Force that day.
I know, right?
Right? So much went on that one day.
They're like trying to figure out how to keep everything balanced at once.
Yeah, I mean, so many Jedi were lost that day, but then you have, like you said, Luke, Leia, and Ezra. Who, I don't know how it works exactly, what happens when a potential Jedi is born, but I'm assuming there is some heavy force movement that can be felt, just like it can be when they die. I'm assuming when they're born, a similar thing, but maybe in an opposite way, could be sensed if you were attuned.
Well, so, that's I wonder. You have to go back to Phantom Menace. You know, Qui-Gon says, you know, if he was born in the Republic, we would have been able to identify him. So yep. I'm sure there's some type of identification that happens in the Republic records. We do know that there is a medical procedure. You know, they take a little blood sample and they can scan for midichlorians and see if he is eligible to be a Jedi. So there's a lot of different things there. But obviously, with Order 66, the Jedi are disassembled, you know, kind of in shambles, and we have a couple people being born at a very, you know, that are important to the Star Wars saga as we go forward. But starting off in season one, even the first episode, you have Ezra kind of being, you know, the street urchin, kind of, you know, again,
Aladdin,
with Aladdin hair, the street rat tile character, right? I didn't want to draw the similarities between Aladdin and Ezra, because he has the hair already, but he does. Another Disney property, by the way. But he is introduced to the crew of the Ghost early on, because they're both trying to steal the same cargo. And during this, you know, obviously, the crew of the Ghost end up taking it, and, you know, he joins them for this very first mission. But we talked about, when we talked about Hera, how she's kind of the mother, and she kind of convinces Ezra to kind of join and help them, and how there's a bigger fight to go. When Ezra has to go to the ship to warn the rest of the crew of the Ghost that there's a trap, there's a Star Destroyer coming in. Unfortunately, during this time, even though Hera has become kind of a mother figure and convinced him that there is more for him to fight with, more him to do, Zeb leaves him behind, which I guess it makes sense as Zeb's character. And I guess it kind of betrays Ezra early on, and he has to build up this trust with the crew of the Ghost. But of course, Hera convinces them they have to go back and save him. And of course, he joins the crew of the Ghost as Spectre 6 later on. So what do you guys think about Ezra's kind of early on story arc, for the beginning of the series, of being kind of the Aladdin character, the street rat, to actually joining a family and becoming part of the crew of the Ghost?
This is going to sound really bad. I guess it was like from the beginning, you kind of expected it to happen.
Yeah, it was pretty obvious. Like, it wasn't.
Yeah, a little predictable, right?
Yeah.
It was predictable, but it was one of those things where I feel, you know, the nice part is I feel like it wasn't super forced, even though it was predictable. You know, like, you saw the characters, you know, we talked about how the characters evolved over seasons, and we'll talk about that season 2, 3 with Ezra, but season 1 was really just about getting Ezra where he needed to be at that beginning season.
Well, and it's same for, like, basically the Rebels series in general. We kind of know what happens. It's how they get from A to B that's the question. Same with Rogue One. We kind of know that they succeed, but we don't know how it happens. So it's kind of more the interest of the character's development and how they get to that point that's of interest, not what the destination is, because we already know that fact.
Mm-hmm. Dano, any thoughts on Ezra early on?
It's interesting. He's an interesting character. One of the things I noticed you didn't put in here, but I saw in the wiki that I didn't know before, was that Ezra had spent some time with Bossk. I didn't know that was the thing. Do you know if that's part of one of the books or something? Because I just think it's funny that, like, he actually spent a decent amount of time with Bossk and was, like, on the Houndstooth and had some weird adventures with Bossk. And I'm like, that's a weird tie-in that comes in later. And he ends up not liking people like Lando Calrissian. Remember, he didn't like Lando. But again, Lando's kind of a shysty individual. So
well, he doesn't like Lando. Well,
I can see why Bossk someone wouldn't like Lando.
Yeah, Bossk is part of the books. The
is that what it is? Okay,
Gladiator Knights, which is it's not a novel. It's a one of the children's books type things.
Ah, okay. But so is it canon though? Is that part of his official story?
I would say it probably is. Pretty much everything that's released now is considered canon.
Interesting. I do like his story. Of course, it follows a lot of the same tropes that the other Jedi and big characters have, where they lose their family early on, or, you know, some kind of distress happens like that, where they lose their parents or father figure or whatever. That's why I feel it's predictable, because it's always those same tropes over and over again. But I do like him. I like that he's kind of bratty to begin with. And, you know, him and, like, Sabine don't really get along in the beginning. They kind of fight with each other. And that continues a little bit towards the end. But, like, I think in season 1 they did a good job of building up Ezra's character. Only to, like, come season 2 show how much more he's grown.
Yeah, and that's exactly it. You know, in season 1, you know, he finds Kanan's lightsaber. He's kind of exposed to the idea of this rebellion that's kind of joining. He kind of exposed the idea that he has the ability of the Force, which is kind of interesting. You know, it's interesting to him, and obviously he has these strong ties to Lethal, which all the way through season 1, 2, and 3, the crew, you know, Phoenix Squadron and the crew of the Ghost have a strong tie to Lethal. You know, that's what their end goal at the end of season 3 is. Is to, you know, to free Lethal. So he's from Lethal. His parents spoke out against the Empire on Lethal. So you get this really basic understanding that he is the poster boy of the rebellion on that planet. So much so that by the end of season 1, he, you know, speaks to, you know, he puts out a message to them about, you know, basically following in his parents' footsteps, and talks to them about resisting the Empire. Which I think is a really heartfelt moment, and kind of leads up to the finale of season 1, because it leads to season 2 of, hey, you're out there now. When you guys made that broadcast, the Empire knows there's a rebel cell here, and you let other rebels know that you're around and they're not alone, which I think is really great, because it kind of leads to, you know, that sense of hope that you get in A New Hope and everything that's there.
Yeah, it opens it up to a bigger world all of a sudden. The rebellion's not as small as we thought it was.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things that Rebels does a really good job of doing, is it kind of introduces us to a bunch of the idea of rebel cells, which, you know, you definitely want to keep the rebellion separated and kind of isolated,
because
Empire is so big and so large, you know, massing planets and systems, and, you know, obviously they're building things like the Death Star. But yeah, so definitely season 1, it sets up Ezra as the focal character. Season 2, we probably learn a little bit more about his character and what we get to see him, specifically, you know, learning to become a Jedi and other influences. You know, I remember one of my favorite scenes of Ezra is him with his lightsaber trying to deflect blaster bolts, and you have Chopper just throwing junk at him, and they're standing on top of the ghost, and he just gets so frustrated, which reminds me a little bit of Luke Skywalker trying to deflect blaster bolts, but at the same time, you can see him as just, you know, just a kid who's like, I'm supposed to have this, and I've kind of experienced it a little bit, you know, experienced some of the, you know, the force, like he knows he has it, but he can't control it yet, and it's just frustrating for him, and he gets hit, you know, pelted by Chopper, who, you know, this King Tyrion, you know, this really cranky droid is throwing garbage at you. Like, it makes sense.
Be doing so.
Yeah, and enjoying it at the same time. Yeah. So, what do you guys think about, you know, Ezra in season two kind of experiencing the Force and just starting to learn it through from Kanan?
Not to go back on the, like, Harry Potter referencing. But as much as that's a sucky way to learn about the Force is having a droid throw garbage at you, wouldn't we all want to learn how to use the Force?
Yeah, just like anywhere. Of course. I agree. So I think it's just one of those things where Ezra is learning to use the Force, and the best way that, you know, Kanan can teach him. Again, you know, we've learned that Kanan is not really a Jedi Knight. We learned that at the end of season one. And season two, you know, eventually at the end, he is confirmed by essentially a ghost, Force ghost, that he is now Jedi Knight and he can train Ezra. But, you know, Ezra is influenced a lot in this one. And, you know, we'll get to it towards the end of season two. He is influenced by Maul, and we don't really know where he's going to be. You know, when we talked about when you learn about the Force through Obi-Wan Kenobi and A New Hope, you know, or in Empire Strikes Back, Return of the Jedi, and Luke asks the questions, is the dark side stronger? And it's like, no, it's just quicker. It's a different way. And that's where someone who is Ezra, who grew up on his own, he's kind of rambunctious. You know, his personality kind of leads to where he can easily fall to the dark side. But we'll talk more about that in a second. But what's interesting is Ezra, at these Jedi kind of learnings that he has, he introduces himself and he meets Rex and the rest of the clones early on in season two. Now, obviously, Kanan has problems with this because of what the clones did. But the clones obviously still have their direct, you know, relationship with the Jedi and instantly look up to them. And, you know, you see Rex slips and calls him general and stuff like that. And Ezra, who doesn't have any bias, instantly takes to Rex and the rest of the clones, which is, again, it's shows you Ezra's kind of personality. I didn't put notes in here, but you also see him in his relationship with like Hondo and stuff like that. Ezra is very trusting. So much so that they even call it out one episode where, you know, Kanan and Hera said, you know, Hera tells Kanan he has to learn on his own. He has to fail, you know, to learn from it. So what do you guys think about Ezra and his relationship with the clones, specifically in the episode where they meet and then going forward with Rex working with him?
That whole thing was a big nostalgia bomb for me. Like, seeing the clones back and having everyone, not just Ezra, but everyone involved with the clones. It was a really cool moment. I remember being at the Star Wars Celebration before that, where they teased us that we were going to be getting reappearances from the clones, and it was a real cool moment. I mean, I like that he does, like you said, he does trust everybody really easily, and that's what ends up getting him in trouble with Maul. That's the exact thing that, while it's good in the case with the clones, that's exactly what got him in trouble with Maul. And I don't know, I liked it. I like his arc in 2 is good. I like that he had the unconventional Jedi training, like all the other main Jedi characters we know. Nobody gets the traditional training anymore. They all get the weird, you know, trained by someone else who is no longer officially a Jedi, or it's not a sanctioned training. So I like what they're doing with him. Again, it follows the same tropes as everybody else, though. So it got a little bit predictable at times. There were a lot of moments, especially in season two, where I felt like, okay, this is totally what Ezra's going to do. And he did it. But in season two, he was, you definitely got to see him grow more. He lost a little bit of the brattiness towards the end. He kind of mellowed out, and then they kind of brought it back again in season three.
Mm-hmm, a little bit. Exactly. You know, his relationship, you know, he never loses his personality. It's always the same.
Well, that is a teenager. The brattiness doesn't go away.
No. Yeah, it only gets worse.
Yeah.
Exactly. But yeah, so, you know, when him being meeting Rex and Ahsoka, you know, he instantly looks up to Ahsoka, which I think is pretty cool, because Ahsoka is this Jedi, even though she doesn't call herself a Jedi anymore. But it is one of those things where he instantly has this bond, because he's learning, and he feels like, you know, he's trying to find his place in the world. He's trying to find his place with, you know, Phoenix Squadron. You know, obviously the rest of
he's probably got a really good intuition about people, though. After being on his own for like 8 years, he's probably learned to pick up on, like, hey, these people are going to be trustworthy, and these people instantly I know not to mess with them.
Yeah, and that's exactly why. And that's why I feel like it's okay for him to have joined, you know, the Phoenix Squadron and the crew of the Ghost so early on, because it makes sense. Like, it's definitely along him.
Especially with what his parents were into. And
yeah, and that's kind of what it comes down to. But leading to, you know, all the way to, you know, with Ahsoka and his, you know, going to Malachor with Kanan, you know, at the end of season two, we kind of learn a couple different things. One, that Ezra obviously is a fairly strong force wielder. He is influenced by the holocron, the light side holocron that Kanan has. And he goes to Malachor, gets separated, and he meets Maul. No longer going by the name Darth Maul, but he meets Maul. And they go through and they recover the Sith holocron together. They use their powers together. They used, you know, the Force to hold up the building and everything, and they recover the Sith holocron. And it isn't until, you know, Ezra comes back out and sees Ahsoka and Kanan that they recognize who Maul is, because they have to fight some Inquisitors. You know, there's three Inquisitors there. So that whole leads up to, you know, kind of what's going on Malachor. And it's interesting because he instantly trusted Maul. You know, Maul really didn't, you know, when we talk about his, you know, you talk about his kind of a, you know, his sense of, you know, what to trust and what not trust. You can still see the naivety, you know, how naive he is sometimes. You know, we see it with Hondo, but you see it more with Maul at the end of season two, where he trusts him and he's like, no, I trust him right now. He helped me. He's okay. And then obviously Maul does do what he, you know, intends to do. You know, he fights against the Inquisitors because he has his own agenda, which is what it is. So, you know, it's one of those things where he kind of is influenced by Maul, but he's still obviously, you know, a Padawan of Kanan. Leading up to that whole thing, they do confront Vader, which is, you know, a couple times, once on Lothal, and they completely get demolished, but they also see Vader in, you know, on Malachor. And it's one of those things where Vader is a very different character than the Inquisitors they've been fighting before. And because you have, you know, Maul and his own agenda, Maul at this point does eventually confront Kanan when Ezra is not around. And that's where Kanan goes blind. Eventually, Kanan does get the upper hand on Maul, and Maul disappears. But it's one of those things where Ezra doesn't know this and didn't see it happen. So in his mind, he kind of has this weird, do I trust him, do I not trust him still? Even though he's seen what Maul has done to Kanan. And I feel like that's interesting, because at the end of season two, you know, with the Sith holocron and the light side holocron, I think all of us, when we saw the teaser for season three, we're going to say, is Ezra going to fall to the dark side? I think we were all pretty confident that he is going down this dark side path. Would you guys agree, or do you have any other thoughts on that?
No, they totally hinted at it that he would, especially by introducing Maul towards the end. And they, like, in that teaser, they did show a lot of Ezra. I think they showed, like, the Sith holocron. There was a lot. They definitely pointed us in that direction. Even the first couple episodes of season three, there were some moments. There were some moments that you're like, Ezra, what are you doing?
Well, like, the end of season two, just that, like, that final look of Ezra with the holocron. But also, as you said, the first, I don't remember if it was the first or, like, the second episode when Ezra's leading the team. And
it's the first
episode. Danya kind of spoiled because she saw the episodes.
Is this the one with the walkers where he controls it and walks it off the cliff? Yeah.
Well, and it's interesting because the walker, you know, I put that in the notes there. He doesn't actually control the walker. He controls the mind of the driver of the walker.
That's right.
So he's using a mind trick. You know, we talked about, you know, Jedi mind tricks. You know, if Jedi can use a mind trick to convince someone to do something, there's a lot of nefarious things they can obviously do. And I don't want to dive into what you know, they could possibly do. But obviously, it's pretty obvious what they do. Here, he forces an AT-ST walker driver to walk off a cliff by influencing his mind. That is super dark. Like, he forces someone to commit murder or suicide.
Suicide.
Yeah, well, and also murder, because he's forcing him to shoot other people, too. You know, you see his hand, he's triggering, he's shooting the other people through the other person. Like, it's really dark. Now, at the same time, you have to remember what happened here. You know, obviously, Kanan got hurt. He completely questions himself. Kanan's kind of a recluse in between season 2 and 3. I would love Forces of Destiny to tackle some of that time frame also. But you have Kanan kind of questioning himself. Ezra has been forced to kind of continue to do what he does on his own. So he is definitely playing with fire in the sense of the light side and the dark side here. He's playing with both holocrons. I don't even think Kanan realizes that he has both holocrons at this time.
No, so he doesn't.
He's learning from the dark side. You know, he's learning from both holocrons. And it's one of those things where he is, you know, given the opportunity to lead. You know, he's changed his haircut from the Aladdin, rascal street rat type hair to this shaved head. He kind of looks mean and dark at this point, too, almost.
Yeah, he looks like an Inquisitor.
Yeah,
he looks a lot like the Inquisitor.
Yeah, so he's looking a little bit more like that. And, of course, he's doing this dark side thing. Now, obviously, this leads to the first half of season 3, where he ends up being confronted with Maul, and they end up, you know, merging the two holocrons, where it shows a vision of Obi-Wan Kenobi and Luke, right, on Tatooine. Now, they don't know what this is, but obviously Maul knows. But Maul feels like he needs Ezra to be there with him, so there's a whole plot, you know, to get Ezra to Tatooine, which we'll talk about in a bit. But it is one of those things where at that point in time, I think at the end of the mid-season finale, once that kind of, you know, the merging of the two holocrons come together, Ezra sees that using the dark side is not a way to really protect his friends, and he turns directly from the dark side. He now is fully committed to using the light side of the Force, and he sees that there's hope, which is really interesting when you think about it, that Luke is the new hope for Ezra. He sees that, he thinks it's Obi-Wan Kenobi, but he knows that Kenobi is alive. He sees that, you know, he's around, that he needs this to help defeat the Sith, defeat the Empire. And it's kind of changed his, you know, his outlook on everything, and he completely committed to light side. Would you guys agree, or is there something else I'm missing that I'm just skipping over on that?
No, I felt the same way, because in the beginning we saw those hints that he was going to go dark side, but by the end we lost all of that. We didn't see any of that again towards the last few episodes of season 3. So yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. He did go full light side by the end of season 3.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Yeah, so, you know, so that's kind of where it leads to. And the nice part is, at the end of the back half of that, that's where you also see him being a more supportive character for a lot of other characters. You know, he's no longer been added into this family. He's no longer the last added. He's actually a member of the family, if you will, by the end of season 3. You know, when you have someone like Sabine who's struggling with her relationship with her family, Ezra's there to comfort and help her. He's helping her train. You know, when it goes to, everything. When he goes to, when Thrawn is attacking, you know, a chopper base, Ezra's the one who's able to sneak away, and he goes ahead and, you know, goes to Sabine and calls Mon Mothma for reinforcements. Like, he is there to be a full support, you know, member of the rebellion at this, which I think is really cool and gives us a lot of opportunity for season 4 to see his character grow. I'm trying to think. Is there anything I'm missing on season 3 of Ezra?
No, it was his big maturity arc. By the end of it, he's pretty mature. But it's going to be interesting, like you're saying, season 4, what are they going to do? I don't think they're going to tease too much dark side going forward. They kind of resolved most of that. I'm sure there will be something, but they resolved most of that. So that's not going to be the big draw in season 4. But we're going to have to find out what happens to him. Like, what... Is he going to die in season 4? Why is he not around come Rogue One time or anything else like that?
A New Hope and everything.
Yeah.
I've never watched the episodes live, but they start off in, what, September, October?
Mm-hmm, the fall.
Yeah.
And then the Last Jedi is in December, so it'll be interesting to see if they try to play off of that or not.
Yeah, I don't think they will play off of Last Jedi at all. But
yeah, traditionally, they haven't been doing tie-ins like that, and I really want them to, but they haven't been.
Well, and I know it's a different timeline, like one, like they're
But they could still, you know, do something if they really wanted to.
Well, and going back to the like the joking theories about Ezra Snoke or Rey's father or whatever, do like they tie it in that way? But then that also kind of reveals what happens at the end of season four. So.
Yeah, and that's what's interesting is like I feel like season four is gonna be really weird because we know the Ghost Chopper and Harrison Dula is at the Battle of Scarif. We don't know if they survive. We don't know if that's gonna be the end of season four. Leading up to that, the teaser photo we've had is with the Mandalores. You know, the Mandalorian war between House Ren and House. Not Vizsla. I talked about it last weekend. I just can't remember. But we see the Mandalorian war between Sabine's clan and the other clan that is part of the Empire. So it's definitely going to be focused a little bit on that because that's what's affecting our Rebel cell that we've been following in Star Wars Rebels. What happens at the end with Kanan and Ezra is probably the most interesting because obviously the series follows, you know, Ezra all the way through. And we don't know if there is going to be some tie-in to, you know, The Last Jedi or afterwards. Is Ezra going to survive? If he's going to survive, where is he during all this? Without spoiling any Thrawn novel, you know, what happens to Ensign Vanto? You know, is that going to come out and be something that happens in one of the other books or a movie or something like that? There's some really interesting things that we see that have just, you know, as they redo the entire Star Wars universe, you know, the new canon, there are certain elements that have been put in place to really expand the universe
for they're not being wasteful with it. They're not just being frivolous and just putting a bunch of random stuff. A lot of stuff is coming into play later. So
you start to see it, like, you know, I think the idea of Saw Gerrera being in Rogue One was not something that they did intentionally. It was like, oh, this is the character they need, we have that character, let's tie this together. And then as they started to do these things, they said, oh, well, we can pull this from here, this can be here, you know. Definitely I think Hera would be in Rogue One, so they have General Sulula over the walkie, you see the Ghost, you see Chopper on the planet in Yavin, so you know that this has all come together. You see Mon Mothma call the Rebel cells together in Rogue One or in Rebels, and you see them together again on Yavin in Rogue One. So you see all these things start to piece together. You see Rebels get the, you know, the hammerhead ships from Princess Leia to the Rebel fleets. And guess what? Yep. Those hammerhead ships is what destroys this Star Destroyer that takes down the Scarif shield so they can get the plans. You know, so all these little things are being tied together. Obviously, Pablo Hidalgo, Dave Filoni all work together to make sure that this story is cohesive. So season four, something has to happen to Ezra and Kanan to explain where they go. And I'm really interested to see because, you know, it's one of those things where they're not opposed to killing characters off. We saw that with Rogue One where everyone that we follow died. So, you know, obviously this is a children's show, but it quickly evolved, just like Clone Wars did by season two, to be more of a mature, full-fledged storytelling.
It's a drama.
Yeah, it's a drama. So I'm excited to see where Ezra goes in this next one. Obviously, he has grown significantly over the three seasons, and he's no longer going to be kind of tied to the dark side, but he's definitely a pivotal character that can change the outcome of different things. So we'll see kind of how he is in season three or season four. You guys say anything else about Ezra?
He's Snoke.
He's not Snoke. I'd be more okay if he's like if he is Benicio del Toro's character.
But the name change is a weird thing.
Well, but we don't know Benicio del Toro's character.
I thought we did. I thought it came out in the Vanity Fair.
No. That's what they call him, but they haven't told us what his name is.
Okay,
that's what they call him on set.
Also, it's not the first time a Star Wars character has changed their name.
That's true.
That's true. Kanan's done that too.
Yeah.
And Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Old Ben.
What's the other ones?
Darth Vader.
Ben Kenobi versus Obi-Wan. Yeah, Anakin. So, yeah, you know, and that's pretty obvious what we'll see there. So, I'm kind of excited to see what happens with Ezra going forward. He is the character that I follow the most and I'm excited for in Rebels. But we'll just have to wait and see. Anything else, guys?
think we nailed it.
So too.
All right. Well, thank you all for listening to another episode of Resistance Radio. Feel free to reach out to us on Twitter at @RRadioPodcast or on Facebook at facebook.com/ResistanceRadioPodcast. Remember to visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/ResistanceRadioPodcast. Check out that After Dark episode. It's really cool. Those After Dark episodes are 30 minutes, so there's a bunch of fun additional things that you guys can listen to us talk about and just go off on, which is great. As always, I'm Mikey B.
I'm Caitlin.
And I'm Dano.
And may the Force be with you.
And also with you.